Beautiful lady.
Hey, beautiful woman.
Beautiful woman.
How's it going?
It's a podcast. Woman. It's a day for podcasting. It's a podcast.
It is indeed the day for podcasting. And it feels like it's been, like, the day of podcasting is upon us. And I feel like, it's been ages. It's been 100 years.
It's funny because it really hasn't.
I know. Of course, this is just, like, how things are right now. The problem is that everything, like, 100 different things are happening every day.
I know.
We need to stop that somehow. Like, we need to intervene. There need to be fewer things happening.
I can't say what on the podcast, but I think we're all making moves.
I could think of at least three things off the top of my head that I would like to stop happening. And they all have to do with the Zionist sensei. One of them is by extension, and it's Joe Biden's heart. Can I say, okay, so this is going to come out the same week as that that photo of him with the cake that's on fire. It's not something about, I'm really struggling with that photo. I really want to, like, sit with it. It just feels so there's something about it that feels so otherworldly. Like,
it does feel extremely, like, otherworldly.
Like, it feels not real. Like, not in the sense that it's like has, like, these, like, visual artifacts of an AI generated image, but I'm just like, like, it's real in the sense that everything about him feels like AI. Do you know what I mean?
100%. Give me 5 seconds. One moment.
Oh, my God. I can riff on this more. I have to
keep going. It's on
it. Because literally every time I, like, hear his voice, I'm like, surely that's not real. Like, surely that's not actually happening. And, like, you know, just making his little blunders all the time. I'm always, like, replaying the video of him falling up a flight of stairs. I think it's really funny. Did you ever see the video of Justin Trudeau falling down a flight of stairs?
Yes, I also have seen that one as well.
Tor,
it's a good video.
I love it. I should fall downstairs more. Also, that is a video that from, I think, last week, maybe this past weekend, that was, like, Justin Trudeau getting harassed by protesters at dinner.
Wasn't it Elizabeth Warren recently where she was also getting harassed, and she's like, it's not the place for this.
Oh my God, they're so fucking annoying. These people, like, the political, so fucking pedantic and stupid and smarmy and whiny and pathetic. It's just pathetic.
The whole thing to them is political theater, and it's like, this is not the halls that we conduct this business in. It's like, well, babe, some of us, politics are real. Some of this is real life.
They should literally parody.
Oh my God!
Fair use.
God. I will say also that I really am struggling with, like, the day-to-day routines now more than ever. Like, I think we all are, especially, like, those of us plugged in, for lack of a better word. But, like, I just go about my day and it's this, like, profound feeling of restlessness and isolation and connectedness to other people. And also, I don't know how else to put it into words, but, like, it is this feeling of watching something that you feel like you should have a level of control over or the ability to intervene in, and then being like, I am doing everything I can, but it is not enough at the moment. Like, I can't stop it, you know?
Yes.
I think this is the first time in our adult lives.
Yeah. I feel this way at a large scale in relation to this genocide in Gaza. And I also feel this way at a much smaller scale when it comes to like my work. Like, I do a refugee and immigration law, and it's like, on Friday I had plans to participate in some actions that were going on in the city, and I wasn't able to because instead I had to accompany my clients to a sponsorship interview at the immigration office that's out of the city. It was took the entire day to go there. And then it was so frustrating. I wasn't even able to be in the room with them. So it was effectively a waste. And I was just like, you know what? We work so hard in preparing them. And then the decision maker, the officer, like, focuses on stuff that's we couldn't really have anticipated and outside of their control. And you're just like, I'm doing all I can. And it's not like I can do nothing, but there is still a system here that I'm up against. And it's the best we can do is sort of chip away at it. And it's, I don't know. They're obviously not comparable situations at all, but it's like this feeling of just like, I'm like, how can I make myself useful here? Especially where it's like, I don't know, these clients, it's really been on my mind because I think their case is going to get rejected. And like, I was working with them really hard on it, quite intimately for the last like weekish or so. So like, I kind of like them now, like as people. So I just like, I'm like, I really wanted to work for them. I don't know. I'm gonna have to focus on that a little bit tomorrow. There's some more stuff I can submit. Sorry, now I'm just like talking.
No,
it's just hard to also to feel where it's like, I want to be able to contribute more to a broader social movement, but like other stuff that also matters a lot in terms of like the day-to-day of my work comes up and intervenes intervenes in it or obstructs it. And like, I think if I had a stupider job, I would be more like, girl, fuck it, I'm gonna go to this protest. But I like kind of can't, because I'm like, oh, like this actually matters, which is like a blessing and a curse. It's just like, I don't know. I think it just means I have to figure out how to still make time and space to show up for it, because I think as extreme and urgent as the situation is right now, like unfortunately, like we're not getting rid of colonialism this week. So like, it's as much about plugging into things with a kind of like emergent urgency, and also figuring out how we can contribute to something sustainably long term to build and expand a movement. And it's like both of these things actually have to be handled at once.
Yeah, it's just also this like weird feeling of like, for those of us making moves, not in a specifically like, I mean, offline, there are things happening that I am happening inside of, but online, like at my job, like there's also moves that I'm making that don't become clear just yet. And it's like this weird double life in media right now where I'm not feeling silenced in my workplace. Everyone is very much on the same page, but it's just this isolating feeling to like read the news happening and being like, how are our lives like still going on right now?
Like it's like, haha, this doesn't matter. What are we doing?
I'm sending the tweets and I'm sending off the blogs to keep the bills paid while I do other stuff in real life. But it's also like, it's like what I kind of felt like in the early days of the pandemic and through that first year in 2020, where like, obviously all I talked about online was COVID, because it was like what was getting us clicks and getting our jobs kept for a time when everyone was losing their jobs. But like when we would have moments of like, oh, this other thing right now that is not immediately the COVID, it's like my brain has only a finite amount of information possible for it. And it is overflowed with and then exceeded the capacity for like one very specific thing is the only thing I can think about and talk about with my friends. And then all the other things just kind of feel like, like flowing through me. Like I haven't been able to do anything else. I feel like, like I've had guys want to go out with dates with me, and like I've been invited out by people, and like I'm trying to like get food and like not totally become a hermit. That doesn't feel useful either. But like when, especially like the dates thing, it's like that was like the lowest rung on my ladder, and it just got like knocked off. And I'm like,
so
I
much
have,
other stuff doesn't matter. Like interpersonal, I can't even conflicts, think about you. I'm like, I don't care about this. I don't care about this.
I'm like, you want me to go on a date with you? Like, what the fuck?
It's actually been weirdly like, I've found that like, this is so strange. I found like, I've actually been like weirdly better at like reconciling with people or putting aside petty disagreements with people, just because I'm like, my brain actually doesn't have space for this. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so like, I refuse to be upset with you anymore, because I actually just need to care about something bigger. Like, it's like, it's like just everything else has shifted out of the way. And it's made it also increasingly impossible to like have any kind of relationship with people who are not on side.
Oh my God. Like, no, like, there's obviously, people like, in my life. I
or even people who are like apolitical. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like you can't exist to me right now. Like it's just because I think it's like, if you are not consumed by like politicized grief and rage, I think that it's just like, we are literally living in different realities.
I also feel like I've been very lucky to have a few friends kind of come to me throughout this to be like, look, this isn't something I necessarily gave a lot of thought to, and or I gave the wrong kind of thought to it because of the industry mm-hmm. I was in, the people I surrounded myself with, the kind of family I have, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. the, you know, cultural background I have, whatever, what have you. And especially like there are times where I feel like with Republicanism, for instance, I can't be friends with Republicanism, but like the jig has been up on Republicanism, right? Like,
yeah,
there's no way that you're still a Republican now after the last 20 years and we have like anything to talk about. You know what I mean?
It's just like, it's like, oh, we don't even like exist in the same universe. So no. It's like, whatever.
Yeah. Or
but
like,
now it's like Democrats too. Like, if you're serious about the like about the project of electoral politics, like, girl, fuck you.
Exactly.
Like, I really can't fuck with people who are not anti-imperialist communists.
100%.
It's just, even, it's increasingly difficult to even just have a normal conversation. And maybe that's on me. But no, also it's like, I'm sorry. Fair. Like the stakes are, it's just like the stakes are so high. The stakes have become so high that the terms of engagement have to fundamentally change.
No, exactly.
Like, all around the world, we've entered a new stage of political life.
Like, that's the thing.
New demands.
Is like, with like, say for like instance, like I was using Republicanism or like in the pandemic, like anti-vax shit. That is like, anti-vaccines are not, anti-vaccination is not like a new political concept to the world, nor is it something that like the coronavirus was the first time any of us have ever encountered this. But what I've really had to like sober myself with and really come to grips with in various facets of my life is like that this is a moment for people where like, they have literally not given a single thought to Israel and Palestine outside of Zionist propaganda in the media. Like that is literally it, especially people who are outside of Judaism or like Jewishness as like a cultural background or like evangelical. It's like non-Arab. It's like that is something
we're not,
that
like politicized by like Islamophobia in some kind of way.
And so there have been, what I have found is like, in this moment, there have been a few friends that I have had difficult conversations with or had to be honest with, in the sense that like, I was like, I might alienate you. And that is just going to be what the outcome of this conversation is, if that is how you choose to proceed with me. But like, I obviously am not going to like shield how I feel. I'm not going to like mince my words. I'm not going to like, you know, hold a Zionist close to me in my life whatsoever. Yeah. And I thankfully have had none, but it has been interesting to like have a series of productive conversations where I do feel like people are realizing, at least in my life, like if they hadn't thought about it before, they are waking up to like a new political reality.
Yes.
And in that many ways, like what happened, I think, with a lot of leftists during the Trump years, where they were like, I would consider myself a Democrat, but now I understand communism or labor. Like, I feel like that has sort of happened in a way. And I was thinking
the contradictions are really heightened.
Yes. And it's, and seeing and the people actually, that you would think would be on your side, I'm saying as like a liberal, like be against, you know, the denouncing of mass murder, it's like that I think has broken a lot of people. And so having these conversations with people where I have kind of walked them through and then continually like sent them things like, you should read this, like this is a really good book, this paper, like I have sent now to a few people like papers that I read back in high school and in college because of Tumblr. Thank you to all the Palestinian activists on Tumblr.
Literally, Palestinians on Tumblr completely changed my politics and set me on
100%.
Like literally like changed my life fundamentally.
Yeah. There was papers that were like from various law reviews and
it's crazy
scholarly
how much work Palestinians do. Like in just like the conduct of their daily lives,
yes,
to like to and are forced to assert their basic humanity in this kind of way. And it actually is so transformative.
Yes.
There's a part of it that's like, you can actually almost understand, not sympathize with, but understand why Zionists perceive the mere fact of Palestinian speech as an attack on them, because you cannot help but be sympathetic to the Palestinian cause when you are confronted with even the barest facts about it.
Yeah, like reading...
It's simply so urgent and just,
yeah,
and correct that, like, I think it almost makes sense that Zionists are so vehemently opposed to even allowing them to speak in public. Because it's incredibly persuasive, which I think is like, there's almost like a parallel to like gender, I guess, in the sense that this is a thing that like Zionists and like you know, transphobes, reactionaries insist that these things are like intuitive and natural, and almost biological, and yet they have to be reinforced through criminalization, legislation, social sanction. And even like policing and death, because otherwise they cannot be made to feel like obvious truths, because the counterpoint is itself kind of almost self-evident. Anyway, it's just these ways that I don't know, that I think it's there's something very inspiring and exhilarating about how people are organizing and resisting in this moment, but I also wish I wish it was able to be more effective.
Yeah.
Because capital, like, is unfortunately very, very, very strong.
I was thinking like in in just like friends' lives. Like, because, you know, especially like one of the things about that I think Zionists have used, like obviously completely cynically, like we don't have to, you know, work through that ourselves. About like homosexuality, homo nationalism, pink washing. Yeah. We literally, one of the reasons that our friendship is as close as it is now is because we did an episode together about pink washing in Israel. But I was going to say, like, sending them these links to papers where, like, you know, what Israeli soldiers did to gay men in Lebanon, or like using Palestinian men and blackmail to, you know, pressure Palestinian men into acting as informants, and all the different kinds of like, obviously like covert ops that they have around that, and like long-term goals of like sowing homophobic sentiments, which in some ways is now known, in other ways sometimes did successfully work out for them. Yeah. And like just a lot of stuff like that of like, how can you realistically look at someone saying that like Israel supports gay people and then read excerpts of IDF soldiers torturing Lebanese gay men for fun, who weren't even combatants, who were just like civilians?
It's unbelievable, the level of cruelty that's just normalized in Israeli society. There was one
excerpt that I read.
We get tastes of it by like the things that Zionists say to people on camera with their faces fully covered, wrapped in Israeli flags at protests. They say the most deplorable, disgusting, reprehensible things and face zero consequences for it.
Danny Kaplan.
And it's just like, that's actually an extremely good representation of like literally the most normal Israeli you can think of.
Yeah.
It's just, it's such a genocidal fucking culture.
Yeah. And we would know what that feels like because I would too, because I live in America. And, you know, that kind of speech is also so common here, especially in many Republican spaces. And like, Danny Kaplan has his book Brothers in Arms, which is interviews with IDF soldiers about, you know, what kind of happens within the IDF. And it is one of the genuinely most disturbing things I have ever read. And I had to put the book down. There was what I was saying about Lebanon. There was a gay Israeli IDF soldier vet who recounted his time in the Lebanon war, where a sniper, and trigger warning for people, I would skip ahead like 2 minutes. The sniper unit came upon two men having sex in an apartment building. And in the story, the vet is like laughing about this. Like, this was a really funny thing that happened. Let me tell you about this. This is the crazy thing that we did. And he talks about shooting one of the men while they were having sex and watching the other one freak out, and they all took turns looking through the scope to make fun of the guy and laugh at the one that was freaking out after watching his lover get assassinated on top of him. And it was like this thing where, like, I was reading it, and I am so used to reading about like what the U.S. military has done, but it was this imagery that like just literally has haunted me for like a week now. Like,
yeah.
I had to put the book down after I got to that excerpt, which I saw through Twitter, right? And I've been trying to like pick up books, and then we have a library with some of my friends that we all share things with, like PDFs and stuff. And I had to put the book down after that because I was just like, it's like stuff like that, or like a paper that I read about like how gay Palestinian men are like classified and targeted by various Israeli intelligence agencies, the IDF, the government, etc. That I was like even just seeing it on Twitter, the way like the IDF soldier had the rainbow flag, the pride flag.
That actually happened recently. There was an issue where the IDF like found, or someone in the Israeli like intelligence like found out that someone who's connected to like some member of Lion's Den, which is like a youth resistance group in based out of Nablus, like someone was gay, and so they were basically blackmailing him and exploiting him to use him as like an informant or something. And it's just like, what a dreadful fucking situation. Like, to imagine that's like, you're literally like, it's so death to Israel.
Yeah. And like, I also,
it's crazy
sending that to my friends, I feel like, and just like forcing them to have these conversations with me and like really confront that. I have found a lot of productivity in it, but I think what keeps me going in it is like through some difficult conversations I've had where I was like, I really cared about this person. We have not had political conversations like this offline to this degree. And I was worried for some, but most of them, and actually all of them, I would say, have kind of pulled through and been radicalized by this moment. But I was just thinking again and again about like what happened in the Trump years. We saw a lot of this kind of discourse in America. I don't know how much of it like bled to Toronto, because you guys have also experienced, like, obviously, like most Western countries have, an upsurge in fascism and conservative rhetoric, etc. But like people being like, just cut off your family members. Don't speak to them anymore. Don't engage with them. If your friends turn out to be Republicans, cut them off. Never speak to them again. That kind of thing, right? And in this moment, when like literally we are looking at a death toll rising to 20,000 very quickly, I'm like, what good does it do to send this person off into the world if there is like a brief crack in this line of communication? You know what I mean? Like, what good does it do to like just say, well, fuck you for this, even if, say, they aren't spouting anything terrible in the exact immediate moment. They just might be open to some sort of propaganda that I can intervene on. I don't know. I don't know how else to reconcile it.
Those aren't the people. I don't know. I feel like everyone I'm interacting with is like, I don't know. I think that's a good point. I think it also depends on what one's circles look like.
Yeah, no, I'm saying this is like the minority of things. And most of them have been people that I have known through work. Like, you know, like work, friends. My immediate circle, obviously, if I like am very, very close to you, I would have already known your opinion about Palestine. But this is more like people in media that I think just, I mean, I think maybe it's also just, this is going to sound really judgmental, and if you're a friend of mine in media who maybe this applies to you, then you should do a little bit of introspection. But like, I have realized in this that like, I think I have kept my circle in media very, very small, but this has been one of those moments where I have been forced to really confront the fact that like the majority of the sort of media workers that I operate in proximity to can be and are in this moment excessively shallow careerists. Like, but it's something that like you have to kind of like move through if you're going to be like me, who is an avowed communist. Like, this is not a secret. Joan Summers is a communist. Everyone knows this.
But some of my issue when I was trying to work in media too, where I'm just like, I am not like UOs.
No, exactly. That's what, like, I'm saying. So quite simply. Yeah. And so I have also not been full time in the media like I am immediately right now. And so I'm very lucky to work with the people that I work with now. Like, truly, I am, like, I would say I am extremely fortunate to have the kind of team that I work around now. But like, a lot of people are not so lucky. And a lot of people in just proximity to me, I'm like, oh, you bitches kind of got away with it for like the last 2 years because I wasn't around you, but you people are fucking dumb. Like, you're fucking dumb. What do you mean you're like an editor at like a mid-level fashion magazine posting Mayim Bialik's like screed to like bomb Palestine out of existence, like, on Instagram? Excuse me? And they're like, and like always, it's always the caption, "I'm not Jewish, but," and it's like, okay.
I can't, can I just say, I'm like, I hate, I understand why, but I hate that everything's about being Jewish. I find it so fucking annoying. It's like, oh my God, can we get a new fucking subjectivity? Wait, you have an out soon, so we should talk about this episode, huh?
Dude, I mean, I have so little to talk about with this episode.
Okay, wait, let me talk about something stupid first.
Yeah,
the rumors
please.
Are true. I am a man.
We know.
Yeah, it's been interesting. So it's interesting to think about this episode. This episode is called Games People Play. It's I'm looking at it in the context of like, I've been so obviously famously I had a breakup earlier. I'm at a point now actually where like me and my ex-boyfriend are like talking again as friends, which has been really nice. Which is like, and I'm like dating someone new and it's like chill, which is like, I'm literally in the opposite place from Carrie.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like I can look at this with a bit of like critical distance, but I was once there, so I get what it's like. But, in any case, we'll do this real quick. We'll do this real quick. But like, this episode is basically like it's an accurate depiction of the kind of delusion required to survive a breakup, I guess. Like the it starts with Carrie sort of like convincing herself that she was better than Big, which she is, but not for the reasons that she thinks. And then basically her friends are just like, "You're being so fucking annoying talking about this guy. You need to go to therapy." And then the whole episode basically is about her being bad at going to therapy, and her therapist kind of sucks. And then she like ends up like dating some guy randomly. It's like a really like ill-advised fling. I hate the storyline. The whole thing feels kind of shallow and like really like an artifact of an age where people had a completely different relationship to therapy and like psychology generally. And so in that sense, like that, I think more than the actual plot points of the episode is what's interesting about it. You know, because I'm like, you know, she's talking wrong about incorrectly about her experience with Big. And I think, you know, the show is not equipped to actually address what's going on there. But what I think is interesting is that like, you know, now people are obsessed with therapy. I think Americans especially, New Yorkers especially, are like obsessed with therapy. And it's like interesting to see that this was a time when like therapy was still kind of, I guess, newer in culture. Yeah. This came out at the same time as the show Sex and the City is one of the flagship shows of HBO, same as The Sopranos. And so like both of them deal with therapy in this interesting kind of way. Whereas just like, you know, it's as maybe, I guess it's a way to like challenge and understand a character's motivations better and introduce them to a kind of almost symbolic vocabulary. This is more so in the case of The Sopranos than in this show. But if there's just like, but it's like, if you're in therapy, it means you're crazy.
Yeah. I have something so problematic to say. Yeah. I related to Carrie so much in this episode.
Okay.
No, just like when she's talking about, like, when she says to Miranda, "I understand why you see a shrink because that's you're funny. Like always in your head, but I just don't get it." I'm like,
I mean,
mood.
Yeah. I think she's very, like, you know, she has a very embodied experience. But it's just like funny that, like, she's just like, you know, this doesn't exist anymore. This, like, kind of like this, like, a privileged white woman, you know, just rolling through the world loose. Is like not a thing that actually happens that same kind of way. Like if anything, they're the actual
most therapized,
drugged up and therapized, which is interesting.
I mean, I do think one of the greatest problems in my life, and I've talked about it before, like I call myself sober because that is like the easiest way to describe what I am. I don't drink anymore. I have severed my connection to alcohol and addictive drugs because I come from a family of addicts. I had an addiction problem. I still do in many ways, I guess, because obviously it is a lifelong thing that doesn't go away. But alcohol was my drug of choice. And then also like things like cocaine and NyQuil and things like that also just were exacerbating the problem. But I don't call myself sober necessarily because I don't also, like, I mean, I call it as shorthand, but I wouldn't necessarily say I am sober because I don't work a program, you know? I really struggled with AA, and in many ways, AA sometimes made me want to drink more because, like, this is purely my experience, just to be clear to everyone right now. Like, I'm not criticizing AA because I know it works for many people. I think one of the ways it didn't work for me was the vibe of, like, going and then sitting with and being sort of soaked in a environment where I felt always fixated on the problem and also fixated on all of the things that I associated with the problem and the memories of that problem and other people's memories of their problems and how that all kind of sat with me all the time. And also the like therapy language of like more modern AA and the religious overtones. Like I just like genuinely nothing makes me just slide right off of something more than like therapy language. Like even going to therapists, I have slid off of so many therapists and fired like many like first time sessions because like I just can't handle that vibe of just pure self-indulgence. Like
it's
I am sometimes I'm just like very not a self-indulgent person. I know that might come as like a shock to people, but like I generally
doesn't surprise me.
Like I'm not self-indulgent in the way like I really don't like having the vibe of therapy where I'm like, and now we're gonna talk about myself for an hour because I already talk about myself all the time. Like that's like my job. I don't want to pay someone to talk to me about something when I can.
I don't have new insights about myself. I'm interested in approaching myself in a kind of critical fashion. Actually.
Yeah, and this is my own problem too. Like I really related to at least the mindset that Carrie is in this episode, where she's like my problems are my own, but I don't feel like I am connected to this experience the way that like my friends are, because I have friends who go to therapy a lot. Like I have friends who have had multiple therapists at a time. I have friends that like go to therapy every single week. I've had friends who go to therapy twice a week or maybe once a month, right? And like I think something that always gets me so just like eye twitchy is when conversations with people start to become my therapist said or I have to talk to my therapist about this, because that is like something that I think it is a me problem. I struggle with that. Like it starts to really grind my gears. And I always wonder why, like, why do you have to talk to your therapist about this? We're talking about this. Like,
I know what you mean. It's like, you have to bring this thought to your therapist.
Yeah.
But your therapist shouldn't be like, it's not like, oh, like then I'll get to the bottom of it. It's like, no.
Or like friends. Have you ever had this where, I mean, friends, if you're listening to this, I already told you how I felt about this, but I don't think any of you listen to this. But like when friends will do that thing where it's like say they're having a relationship problem, right? Mm-hmm. Even with like a guy that they've barely been dating for like a few months. And there's like something they want to talk to this guy about. Or a girl. Girls do this too. Non-binary people do this too. Where they're like, I have this problem. Like say for instance that like, okay, great example. Say for instance that you do not like his friends, right? Or that his friend says something rude to you every time you see him, doesn't gender you correctly, or like says something kind of off color, sexist, whatever it is, right? And you don't like the vibe around his friends. And I've had friends legitimately, no joke, be like, this is becoming like a really big problem. Like every time I have to see his friends, I get such bad anxiety and I just don't know what to say to him. And I'm like, well, you should say something to him, or maybe you should say this to him. And then it's, well, I think I'm going to have to, I'm going to talk to my therapist first about what I should say. And then I'll talk to him. And I'm like, okay,
wait. I had the opposite approach, which is like, talk to the therapist after
bring up the issue with
the person who needs to hear it. Like, maybe this is not true in all contexts, but generally I think if it's a context where it's safe to talk about something there, it's like, you are better off addressing an issue within the context of the relationship in which it occurs.
And not trying to use therapy as like a predictive analytics tool for like how to gamify your life or your relationship to like get the best, most desired outcome. Like, I think that's something I really struggle with. And I guess that like for some people that might be helpful. But like, also it's like, I generally start to get this feeling of like, this is an AB conversation. Your therapist needs to see their way out of it. Like, like I also hate that feeling of someone's therapist like looming over our conversations. Yes. I'm like, I know you already talked to me about your therapist. I don't need to know that you are actively planning to dialogue about what we're saying right now with your therapist in an hour. Like,
Also, I think there's sometimes like it's like the therapist might have the wrong take on it.
Yes.
Or something like, I happen to like my therapist. I'm in therapy. Like, I like my therapist because we've built up a rapport and like actually is like quite attuned to what I'm trying to get out of it. But like, you know, watching this episode or something, like the tack that this therapist takes, like the one time that we see an example of Carrie in therapy is that she's like, well, you're dating the wrong man. And one thing they have in common is you. So it's actually all about you. And it's like, that's not the right approach.
No.
Like,
and that's the thing,
like,
is,
it's
do
like,
we trust Carrie?
Like, that's so weird. Like,
do
if
we
me, I'd be like, hey, I'm going to fuck the wrong man extra hard.
Well,
just
it's like,
just to spite you, you fucking entitled bitch.
It's this thing of like,
piss me off.
Do you actually think that Carrie Bradshaw is reliably interfacing with her therapist on the grounds of like truth, honesty, or like any sort of emotional intelligence?
No,
because like,
way.
Carrie doesn't even understand who her friends are, let alone the men that she dates. Like, you think she's accurately dialoguing about her week to her therapist? Like, her therapist is would be operating in like a complete dreamland of
the
a scenario.
Is better off
like,
reading her column.
Yeah, like, and that's also where I think about with some friends of mine, or just people I have known. I don't want to keep saying friends of mine because this is not an active problem in my friendships right now. But like, in the past, people I've known who have like sort of overly relied on therapy that I think I've had a hard time then kind of going back to therapy because of is like, knowing how unreliably some people can narrate their own lives to themselves. And then I just know what you are saying, your therapist is wrong. And it like, it makes me feel crazy.
People
like,
always need to be
like,
heroes,
you don't even have an
I
accurate
think,
POV.
People need to be heroes in the telling of a story to themselves and to their therapist. And I just don't understand that at all. Yeah. So it's just, I don't know, weird episode.
And she,
what else is going on in this episode?
We get Samantha saying games are empowering. If you know what you're doing, you're totally in control of the situation, which like,
If you're like playing games, it means you're not in control of the situation.
It's like,
no, actually, I think that might have been Charlotte.
Weirdly
took a similar tack in this episode.
Yeah,
though. They're actually
games.
I think
this episode was poorly written because I think that they were trying to figure out how to position Carrie in the second breakup. You know, because this is not their first breakup. This is their second, and it's like, we already did like sad Carrie, like pensive, melancholy Carrie. Okay, well, let's just double down on neurotic Carrie and like, let's make an episode about how she's crazy. She's
and
going
so,
crazy.
And they have to put her in therapy because it's like, well, that therapy is what's going on. And there is something to be said about her being neurotic.
Yeah.
But then it's like, none of the other characters have a relationship to neuroses in the same kind of way. Maybe Miranda. But even that, Miranda's storyline is like, I don't know, Miranda's showing her tits to her gay guy neighbor across the street.
Who thinks
many
that
such
he,
cases.
Who's fucking
moving on?
Gay. So like, Miranda's
not,
fucking.
That's nothing. That's
Miranda
nothing
thinks
to
she's
me.
Having like window sex with a guy who's actually having window sex with the person above her, and she eventually sees him in the window or in the grocery store, the person who she's been showing herself to in the window, and he goes, "Oh yeah, you're the girl that lives below the guy I've been having." Cruising,
yeah,
right?
I've been
cruising, and I'm like, oh my god,
it's like, that's funny, but that's it. What else is going on? I don't know if I even have notes about.
I also think, well,
Charlotte,
one of my
she's
things
kind of gives me nothing.
Yeah, this episode was kind of nothing for the other
Samantha's storyline. It also pissed me off. It's like, okay,
she would never.
She's fucking a guy who's obsessed with sports, and
she would never
the
do
team
this.
Is winning. And it's like, what's the point of this? Like,
what's the
just
point?
Fuck someone else. Who cares?
But
like,
also,
what's like, what are you doing? You're Samantha Jones. Like, go fuck someone else. You can fuck anyone. She always picks these like weird, rich, like right-wing middle-aged men.
Trans.
And it's like,
transgender.
She's cursed to always go for a chaser for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, she's unfortunately living in like, she's like in the like, the chaser like chat room of the mind, like she's like trapped
she
there
leave.
Basically like she can't escape it. Like it's impossible for her to understand that she has potentially sexual prospects who are just like normal guys.
like, you know, maybe they have like decent job, they make some good money, but they like, you know, they're like interested in art and they like watch cool movies and they like don't have like a fucked up relationship to class generally. It's just like everyone that she goes after has some sort of like, is like some sort of like right wing businessman who's not hot.
Yeah.
And it's
also
just like, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You're so
think
fine.
That one of the things that really struck me about this episode, and we can end here, is like on this conversation, is like, I found that most of this episode is basically just a prelude to the Aiden storyline. Like,
yes.
Everything that this is about is like, Carrie chooses the wrong guys, and the wrong guys are emotionally unavailable men who don't show up for her, don't do nice things for her, aren't like present in her life, don't get along with her friends, et cetera, et cetera. And like, the common denominator in all of these relationships is her, that she's the problem, that she's the one that goes after men that don't like her, et cetera, et cetera.
And they're setting her up for her to be the problem for Aiden.
Yes. They're setting her
like,
up to be the problem for Aiden.
Kind of misogynistic writing.
Yeah. And it's like,
it's starting to rub me the wrong way.
The way that they position Aiden is like, very much the vibe is like, finally a good man, and like, look, Carrie is too complicated for a good guy, right? Like, he's present, he's nice, he does things around the house for her, he like builds her things, he goes out camping with her, and he like cooks for her, and he does all these nice things, and like, it's not enough because crazy Carrie like isn't fulfilled, can't stop cheating on like this nice guy. And it's literally their plot line in And Just Like That, is like, he basically gets back at her for breaking his heart twice,
and because she is all in for him and then he has an out,
as
which
out.
Is like, which is not nothing, but it's also it's like, but also it's like, oh boy, like,
yeah, no, it's
so
just,
ready
it's,
to commit to him.
It's just hard to watch her basically get set up to be owned 20 years later, like,
by
a kid who ate mushrooms in Virginia, like,
like, what? That also is so, something I do appreciate is that like, the people in who write this show, even years and years later, don't know shit. Like, don't know about
The more,
it's just like,
accurate,
you guys not go out. Like, it's just so weird.
The more accurate storyline for Aiden's kid was that he would be like a school shooter or something. Like, that would have been like the accurate.
He's a cattier femboy.
He's like, he's a cattier femboy manifesto writer.
He's a streamer and he's got a gun.
He 3D printed it too. Well, I have a hot date to get to, so I'm gonna dip. No, it's a friend. It's a friend.
I was like, but, are we gonna talk about this? I'm like, is it legal for me to talk for a second about,
you can talk about
a hot boyfriend?
Yeah,
really quickly.
I just want to say,
my hot boyfriend. Anyway,
enough.
That's it.
I have been zooming in on every.
Ooh, yum.
I've been zooming in on every picture.
Oh boy. All right. That's all I got.
By the way, I got
you know, it's cold out. Good idea. Just saying.
I had a tarot reading about. It wasn't like a love reading.
Oh my
reading.
God, I had an evil eye cleansing the other day. I was
amazing.
Talking about this separately.
Okay. Yeah, no, I got a tarot reading that was really, really good about like where I am at in my life, like for relationships and like romance, but also like how I am to myself in that vibe as well. Like, you know, kind of like what could come and also where I'm at for my own thing. And it was so good. And I feel like it was like forcing me to kind of like confront things that I hadn't thought about, and also like, kind of was saying that the next person should be, maybe not might be, because I'm not necessarily going to ascribe like prophecy to something, but like that I should be looking for something. And like, kind of what I work through is like someone who is like fiery, dedicated, and like extremely present. And I was like, good thoughts.
That's
like,
cool. That's a good way of describing someone. I feel like I hope that's the vibe that I bring to people. Do you know what I mean?
I get like, that from you.
That's cool.
You are present.
And that's very you. Like, you're so driven.
Yeah.
And I think it's such an attractive quality, not only in like, you know, a partner, I guess, but also in like a friend or in any kind of collaborator.
Yeah. I think that's like one of my non-negotiables after hearing about it, is just that like, I think this is kind of goes for anything, but like, I need somebody who shows up. like shows up and like is willing to like really go there and also is reliable, you know, and like dedicated. I think that that's like a very attractive quality in guys. Like got a little spunk, but also loves his hot girlfriend. I think that's like
so important to love your hot girlfriend.
Also, I was gonna say you are very present and fiery and dedicated in people's lives, and you are also very present inside of people too. So I just had to get that joke off before we left. Well, I love you, babes. Do you have any hot date tonight?
Me? No. I am, what am I doing tonight? I have to study. I have to write the bar next week. Isn't that crazy?
You're going
to
be such a good lawyer.
Literally in a week.
I remember when we started this podcast, you were like, yeah, November, I have to write the bar.
I know. And it's literally next week.
And then you're
going to
be like a lawyer
about it. Yeah. Well, I have to finish articling, which is what I'm doing now, but then I'll be a lawyer. If I pass, God willing. Everyone say good luck, Alex. Good luck, Alex.
Good luck, Alex. Will you be my lawyer?
For you, baby, anything.
when I need to, I don't know. I was going to say when I have a late in life Canadian transition. when I plot on Drake to turn him gay or something.
Just hoping.
No. Wait, did you see his new album cover with the angel like anime girls on it? I was like, we have to stop him.
Just release an album. Like, what are you making more music for?
Like, we have to stop him.
Literally, get a hobby. Like, it's just so like he released an album. Why do you need another album?
He got like 4 BBLs in the last week, and he's like
such a freak.
It's so weird. His lipo is so noticeable now.
You should kill him.
No, we shouldn't.
sorry. Parody.
Parody. Okay. Do you want to say goodbye?
Yeah, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Bye, beautiful woman.
Catch me before I go Houdini. Shit is...